Oscar Fogelström is a two-time Swedish Grammy winner, has had over 100 million streams on Spotify, and has worked with Academy Award nominee Lasse Hallström on Sweden's Oscar entry, The Hypnotist. Let's hear how he got started, whether he recommends that composers also work as songwriters, his creative process, and advice on working as a film composer. Welcome to the Soundtrack.academy podcast, bringing you advice on soundtrack composition and production, as well as insights into the media music industry. Each week, I talk with a guest working in media music to discuss how they got started, their creative process, and other knowledge they've gained from their experiences. For links, show notes, and to see all of my previous guests, visit soundtrack.academy/podcast. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite platform. And if you enjoy the show, please also leave me a review. It not only helps me to convince these wonderful guests to join me, but also helps other people find the show too. I'm your host, Johnny Omandri, and in this episode, I have the pleasure of being joined by Oscar Fogelström. Oscar is an absolutely wonderful example of someone who became involved in the music industry, not through forcing new relationships or coldly marketing themselves to anyone who'll listen, but from having a genuine passion for music, collaborating on as many projects and events as would come his way until eventually the right connections started to come along at the right time. As you'll hear, he has a wonderful tale of how he naturally came to work in the industry. People Oscar has previously worked with often mention his ability to bring new stories and emotions to their projects, which we'll also explore in this episode. Thanks to those of you who have already left reviews on the show, it really brings a smile to my face and makes me so happy that people are enjoying the episodes. If you've not left a review already, please do, as it really helps people discover the show. Okay, let's dive into the interview. Thanks so much for joining me today, Oscar.
Thank you.
Can we start off with a little bit about you, in your words, who you are and what you do?
Basically, you know, I'm a composer, a songwriter, and a music producer, I guess. So I've been working full time with music one way or the other for roughly 20 years, I guess. So I've been dipping my toes into most areas that sort of has with music to do, I guess.
Great. And how did you first get involved in music? Are you from a musical family?
Quite the opposite, actually. I mean, to make a long story short, I mean, I started out really early. I mean, when I was like 4 years old, I was just obsessed with music for some weird reason. I would sing all day. I would like rewrite nursery rhymes and songs and record them to a cassette recorder. And, you know, I would play on, you know, the class, I would play drums on the, you know, pots and pans in the kitchen. I would, you know, make trumpets out of plastic pipes and stuff like that. And I recorded my own radio shows where I would record music from the radio and talk. And I don't know, it just... for some weird reason, I don't know why, I was always like really into music, and my father is definitely not into music at all. I mean, not by any stretch of the imagination. He can't sing. He never listens to music. He's a chef.
Okay.
And my mother was actually, she wasn't allowed to be in the room when they had music in school because she sang out of tune. She was so pitchy. So she was expelled, or whatever you call it, from music class. So no musical family, at least.
Wow. So it sounds like your sort of early beginnings with music were really the combination of composing, creating, even music production, you said there, with the messing around with the tape machine and things like that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and then I had an older cousin who came to our house and... played the piano. I mean, we went to their place, and he showed me he liked to play Boogie Woogie on the piano. So he showed me, and maybe I was maybe 4 or 5 at the time, and to me that was like, yeah, that's super cool. I want to do that. So I asked my mother like every day for like 2 years if I could play the piano, and eventually she caved in. And when I was 5 or 6. I started taking piano lessons. But I never did my homework, obviously. I just wrote my... As soon as I sort of had a grasp of the basics, I just started writing my own songs instead.
Sure. I was exactly the same. Like, yeah. I would come in every week to my lessons and say, look what I've learned. And my teacher was like, have you learned what I asked you to? No. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, then you know. Exactly.
Yeah. So, you straight away you were writing your own pieces on piano then.
Yes.
So what brought you, when did you start to really take it seriously and really think you wanted to try and make a life out of it?
Well, that's a funny thing because, I mean, well, so the thing happened, when I was 10 years old, I went to some sort of music school kind of was, and I we sang in the choir and we had a big band and a rock band and stuff like that. And I just played and I got my first synth with a sequencer and a 4-track tape recorder. And I started recording stuff and then we did demos and I played in bands and it just continued, I was just playing music every day. At some point I was playing in 5, 6, 7 bands at the same time when I was older, like 15, 16. And then I moved to another, I'm originally from Uppsala, which is university town just an hour from Stockholm, capital of Sweden. So I moved to Stockholm when I was 19, roughly. Started playing in bands, got my first computer with Cubase, started recording stuff, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I didn't really have a plan. I mean, I just kept on doing what I, always had loved doing, really. I didn't even think of it in terms of like, can I make a living out of this or not? It didn't really matter to me at the time. I was just so happy that I could sort of, I got a small like a basement studio in Stockholm and I just spent every hour there when I didn't work. I had some, extra jobs as a sort of waiter and worked in some restaurants and I did some marketing research and stuff. But basically my life was going to the studio on my, off days or whatever and just record stuff, So yeah, I don't know if that answered your question, but.
No, totally. So it was really, music kind of came about quite naturally and you weren't really pushing or promoting yourself or really going at it as a networker. It just kind of happened quite naturally.
Totally. Yes. I mean, yeah, I certainly wasn't, very business minded when it came to sort of that entire thing. I just, I just did stuff. I helped people do like, I did some, some TV themes for local TV channel. I recorded stuff for people. I did demos. I wrote my own songs, and recorded and sent demos to publishers, etc. But well, again, a long story short, I got a record deal. I think it was in 1999, 98, maybe. Around that time. To do a children's music album, right, for V2 Records, Virgin, Richard Branson's spin-off record label. And it was attached to a Swedish TV show, right? So I did a theme music for the TV show. And then we got asked to do me and my partner at the time that I was working with, got asked to do a full album of sort of kids' music. And we did that. And I got some money to do that. And then we toured sort of the year after with Live Nation. Well, it was Emma Telstar at the time, who later turned into Live Nation, but it was a pretty big tour. It was like with full, we had Knight Rider, we had our own engineer and tour manager and stuff. Like, we played like 30, 40, 50 gigs, during the next summer, basically. And that gave me enough money so that I could, suddenly I didn't need to do the marketing research gigs anymore. I just, kept on and I produced another album for an artist and then we did another kids album and we toured with that and suddenly I was working with music. So it just happened, basically.
Sure. And what was it that led to that record deal in 98 or 99?
Well, we had a talk show, a live talk show at a venue every week at a pretty big, not big, but pretty well-known place in Stockholm, like a music arts place. So we're doing 1 hour live live talk shows with interviews and music, and I was the band leader, you know, the MD, and this guy who was the A&R at V2, he wasn't there in the audience. So we talked afterwards. So we played our theme song from that kids TV show as a fun thing. We talked about it. And he said, you guys did that theme song. We're looking to release like kids albums. Do you want to have a go at it?
Great. So how did you learn the additional skills to compose instrumentally and orchestrally?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, so I don't really have a formal education, obviously, as I sort of, but I mean, I think I got a pretty good start with when I went to that music school for kids. Because that was mm-hmm. that was 6 years, and we did solfege, you know, the do re mi practices mm-hmm. for choir, and we were doing modulations and stuff. So I got a sort of internalized kind of music theory in a way. We also had music theory, obviously, but I was super young. I mean, that was between the ages of 10 to 16.
Sure.
So we sang, you know, I was in the church choir in Uppsala, the boys, you know, choir. So we sang like at mass, we sang like Bach, you know, Passion of Matthew and stuff like that. And, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber's Requiem and stuff. So for me, I guess, and I was always super curious, and I was listening and analyzing. But I guess that sort of was the foundation for me, you know, performing all that stuff, you know, and being a part of it.
Yeah.
And to some extent, you know, analyzing or, you know, trying to figure out stuff. But I mean, I don't have a formal education in terms of, you know, when it comes to orchestration and stuff at all. So for me, it's just, you know, going by, well, I mean, I have, as you do nowadays, obviously I have sort of studied on my own, you know, studied some scores and then, yeah. you know, checked YouTube tutorials, etc. But apart from that, nothing. And when it comes to the sort of tech side, you know, whatever, Logic, Cubase, Pro Tools, and, you know, mixing and stuff, it just comes from years and years of trial and error and experience, I guess. And also, I mean, I've been lucky enough to do some pretty big projects, even quite early on in my career. So where I, for instance, maybe produced, and I got to mix with, you know, some of the top mix engineers in Sweden, you know, so I sat mm-hmm. sort of shotgun and just checked stuff out and asked questions and, you know, so some sort of mentoring was definitely involved also.
Yeah. Yeah, because obviously you've, as a songwriter, you've worked on some really big projects and have had some really good success there.
Sure.
And that's what's led you to be in the room with these professional mixers then?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, sure.
Great. And obviously you mentioned that you live in Sweden as well.
Yeah.
Have you found there's much of an advantage being there as opposed to somewhere like LA or London? Do you think you need to be in a hub like LA or London to be successful? I mean, obviously you're not, and you're being successful.
Well, I mean, yeah, well, depends on, you know, how you define successful, obviously. I mean, well, for certain, I mean, if you're into sort of pop music in that world, which I am to some extent, you know, Sweden's a pretty good place to be, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, Max Martin, whatever, you know, all those guys come from here, and Sweden has pretty good reputation of, you know, being able to sort of deliver pop music. So a lot of, you know, artists and, you know, record labels come to Sweden, you know, and look for music from Sweden, you know, from Swedish songwriters and producers. So in that aspect, it's really good to be in Sweden. You know, I did some stuff with, you know, some German guys, you know, and they were sort of super happy. And they said, we can tell our record label we have a Swedish guy on board. It's brilliant, you know. And everybody was like, wow, this is big time. So that's kind of funny. When it comes to film music and, you know, TV music and stuff like that, I'm not sure. I don't know if it's, I think it's, if anything, it's probably better to be in London or LA, I guess, actually.
Interesting. And talking about your, obviously, the balance of songwriting and film scoring, how do you balance your time across the two? Do you make sure that every month or week you're working on you know, actively seeking one film and one song, or are you, is it just depend what's coming up? How do you find your balance, your time across the two?
Well, again, I mean, every year is different, right? So to be honest, I mean, I love writing pop songs and producing pop music, but at this point in my life, I'm more interested in pursuing, you know, film scoring and episodic TV, et cetera. So at the moment, last few years, I've been more actively, you know, looking for film scoring jobs, mm-hmm. but definitely trying to keep sort of the pop music thing going as well, because I enjoy that too, you know, but at this point, I would say it's like 80%, you know, working towards film scoring and maybe 20, you know, pop music, I guess.
Sure. So I suppose, are you sort of relying on kind of old contacts to bring new work in with your songwriting, but then more actively seeking new projects with the film scoring?
Well, yeah, kind of. Yeah, absolutely. But I'm also pursuing new, you know, collaborations, excuse me, when it comes to songwriting. You know, I'm out there like every month and trying, you know, reaching out, listening to new stuff, you know, talking to other producers and, you know, artists. I just did a co-write with a British team just a few weeks ago, actually, with a mutual friend, and we actually got we have a song on hold for a pretty big US artist, you know.
Oh, cool.
So, but So I guess I'm, you know, trying to make new contacts when it comes to pop music too. Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
And would you recommend that for composers, that they should try and diversify themselves, being a composer and a songwriter and whatever else? Or do you think it's better to try and focus on a niche and do one thing really well?
I don't know, man. I mean, seriously, it's, you know, if... For me, you know, it's for good and bad. I mean, I, you know, everyone has their sort of path or whatever. And for me, since I come from pop music, you know, it's always been natural to me. I mean, that's how I started out, to sort of do that. And then turned out I had a pretty good sense for doing like instrumental music, or, you know, or visual media or whatever as well. But I mean I don't know, I can't, you know, do a general statement regarding that, but what I can say is I'm happy I did all the stuff I did, you know. And I think especially one thing I noticed is the difference maybe between people who have sort of has at least dipped their toes into, you know, writing songs, you know, I find that melodies are more, I mean, you can't really do a pop song without having a proper melody, right? But
yeah,
you can definitely do a, like a orchestral, whatever, 2-minute piece without having a proper melody. You know, it's, it can still sound okay, you know, but if you're trying to do pop music, pop song without the melodies, it's nothing, right? I mean, it's not a song. So I guess for me, at least, you know, all these years spent on trying to sort of chisel out the perfect melody for a song has definitely helped me in my sort of orchestral or whatever, you know, film scoring, composing, because I always try to find like, I don't feel that, you know, a piece is complete or I need to have themes in there, or, you know, so I'm always looking for that and trying to sort of rework until I find, you know, a strong thematic thing that I can sort of, base sort of my entire composition on, you know. Sometimes when I listen to stuff from up and coming people that sort of come from a different background, I miss, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that's quite kind of chordal based now, isn't there?
Yeah.
Rather than melodic. Yeah.
Well, just to be clear, I mean, to me, a melody or can be a lot of different things, you know. It can be a chord progression that has a sort of a strong sort of that's very clear and repeats itself. It can be even a rhythmic thing that, you know, comes back and, you know, has an impact, you know, on the composition. But, you know, it can be phrases that are stretched out, you know, over many bars or, you know, minutes, whatever. It can even be in terms of form, you know, how you can sort of have that be a thematical, you know, thing. Sure. So it doesn't have to be like a melody in a lead instrument.
Yeah. Kind of like a hook.
Yeah, any kind of hook, really. You know?
Yeah. Johnny here, and I hope you're enjoying the show so far. If you want to learn the ins and outs of soundtrack composition, including the skills and equipment you'll need, as well as the entire process of creating music for the moving image, you can download my free ebook, The Media Scoring Guide, by visiting soundtrack.academy/ebook. It's a 40-page, 10,000-word book outlining everything you need to know to get started. Visit soundtrack.academy/ebook to get your copy for free today. Now let's get back to our guest. And you mentioned, when you're working on film projects, that you really find yourself enjoying that visual media. And if you look on the website, you've got some various quotes from people you've worked with, and a lot of them talk about how well you tell a story with your music. Is that something that you're really focused on when you start on a film project, is the story that you're trying to tell?
Well, I mean, that's the gig, right? I guess. But yeah, I mean, I have to sort of connect emotionally with the film, right? I have to, I mean, this is the same for everyone, you know. This, to me, this is the gig, right? To understand sort of the meaning of the film and what the film is trying to convey, or, you know, what kind of message, you know, the filmmaker is trying to get across, and find a way to connect with that emotionally, you know. And then sort of the music kind of writes itself, almost, you know. So yeah, that's I mean, I usually say that, you know, writing the actual music is like maybe 20% of the gig when you're scoring a film, to me at least. And the other 80 is like, I don't know, research and, you know, figuring out stuff, and, you know, and communication with the filmmakers, and, you know, and also, you know, the technical side of things, you know, logistical stuff like naming conventions and sending stamps, etc. But definitely, yeah, but it also takes time, you know. But definitely, the big thing for me is doing the research, you know, before I start, you know, really spending the time, you know, listening to other music, you know, figuring out moods, you know, doing templates, you know, getting into the entire vibe of the project, you know, and also think about, you know, what kind of themes I want in there, what kind of, you know, solutions I want to use for, you know, making the music. And then when I actually sit down, most of the job is already done. So I can just write the music, more or less.
I love that. Like the writing's the easy bit. Because
I
talk about that all the time. Yeah. Like the amount of time you spend conceptualizing will just make the actual writing bit so much shorter.
Yes, totally. I mean, you're always, you know, reevaluating, and, you know, try, you know, you might bump into some, you know, whatever stuff that happens, and you have to sort of reconsider. But to me, you know, I'm deciding on maybe a few keys that I'm going to work in, you know, instrumentation, you know, the kind of, you know, is this film going to have a lot of notes in it or less? You know, is it more like textural, or, you know, blah, 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 whatever. So once you set up that framework up, you know, it's, I mean, I guess it's just different ways of doing it. But for me to do that, you know, ahead, you know, and set that up, makes all the sense in the world. And then when you actually sit down, you don't have to, like, you know, think about all that stuff. You can just start writing the actual music. So, yeah.
Sure. I laughed when you said bouncing stems before. Yeah. I think you put something on Facebook the other day that, yeah, 20% of what we do is bouncing stems.
Totally. I mean, absolutely. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. There should be a better way of doing it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Well, well, the thing is also, I have my sort of way of working, my kind of workflow, and you know, I like to listen to the stems sometimes when I bounce them. Depends on, you know, mm-hmm. how big the project is, and, you know, where I am in the sort of time-wise in the project. But to me, it still makes sense to sort of solo the stems and actually listen to them in Logic. I work mostly in Logic. So, because sometimes I hear stuff and, you know, I
sometimes bounce things as audio, and then it's kind of nice to have a to finalize something, to actually bounce it and then mix it totally separately as audio rather than still having the MIDI and everything.
Totally. I often sort of work with the stems. I bring them into, you know, a separate session or whatever and do the final mixing there. Yes.
Yeah. Talking about process, you've let us on a little bit already about, you know, all of the planning you do, but what is your general process when you first start on a new project? Someone brings you a new film and says, I'd like you to work on this. What's the first thing you do, and what kind of steps do you go through?
Well, like you said, I've sort of already mentioned it kind of, but I mean, yeah, I guess, you know, I probably one of the first things I will do is read the screenplay, sort of get an idea of if sometimes they haven't started shooting yet or whatever, or they're in editing, but it's nothing I could watch. So I will probably read the screenplay first and have a lot of talks with the director, you know, and talk about, you know, the moods, the vibes, you know, emotions, stuff that they're sort of trying to get across. And then, but like I said, I will listen to sort of reference music and, you know, send stuff back and forth. And maybe sometimes I read that Hans Zimmer does something similar, but I actually didn't learn it from him. But I will do kind of a suite.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I will, this is at a little bit, you know, at a later stage, but after I've done all my sort of research that I mentioned earlier and, you know, decided on some stuff, I will, once I feel like that I have a few ideas and they feel kind of ripe, you know, and I will sit down. So I won't write the first notes to picture. Never, actually. I will just sit down and I will write a piece of music or several, you know, and trying to incorporate as much as of the ideas as I have as possible, you know, do some slow stuff, some fast paced stuff if it's needed for the film, you know, do some dense stuff and some, you know, not so dense stuff, and etc. So, and that will be sort of the foundation for the music and also for further, you know, communication with the director. You know, I will send that over and I will, you know, we'll talk about it, because it's always easier to, you know, as you found too, I'm sure, that it's easier to talk about the music when you have something to listen to, right?
Yeah.
You know, otherwise it's so abstract, you know, we could do this, we can do that. Do you want this? You know, and it's, once you have something to listen to, it's so much clearer, you know, we can talk about stuff on a different level, you know, me and the director. So I will do I can't pronounce that. Sweet. And then, you know, once I get the actual film or, you know, some, maybe probably isn't like a locked edit. So, but I will try to identify some key scenes in the film, you know, together with the director. I mean, sometimes you have a spotting session. Sometimes I don't have a spotting session. But regardless if I had a spotting session or not, I will sort of decide on the key scenes in the film, sort of emotional peaks or whatever. And then I will start with those, start scoring those. And I will bring in stuff from my suite and, you know, either sometimes I will bring in like stems from the suite and just put them to the picture and see what happens. And then, you know, make some notes and, you know, maybe I can use this part, you know, the third part or whatever of the suite, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I will do a new session and start working, you know, and then I will sort of backtrack when I've done sort of the key scenes. I will sort of work my way, you know, backwards or forwards or wherever, and just finish the film basically. Yeah. So.
Sure. So you don't compose kind of from scene one through to the end. It's in a random order.
Rarely. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
it doesn't really make sense to me. I mean, sometimes I might start with the opening sequence, you know, if because that kind of sets the mood some often, you know. But then I probably won't do scene two. I mean, it depends on the film also, you know. But yeah, no, I most often I don't do them in chronological order, no.
Mm-hmm. And listening to music, some of the textures you create and the sounds you have are really amazing. Is that a big part of that preparation section? Do you create your own sounds, or is it stuff that you're just combining or layering in your door?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously depends on the project, but the actual instrumentation, but thank you. Yeah, I mean, I like textures, I guess, you know. It's very intriguing to me to have a sound that you're not sure where it is. It's a combination of things, and then it evolves into something else. And, you know, that's something I'm, you know, interested in. I love to listen to stuff like that too. And I like to do it. And I mean, it's a combination of, you know, me making my own sounds, whatever that means, you know, and then combining with, you know, I have a few, you know, go-to, obviously, presets or whatever in various sample libraries. But once I start, especially when I create, so if we call it that, when I create my textures, it's often a very sort of intuitive process where I will just, you know, I'm in some sort of flow, whatever, and I will just put stuff in there and, you know, and jam with myself more or less, you know, and add notes and add sounds, and I will mute something, and then I will, you know, bounce something and put it through filters, and I reverse it, and then I'll, you know, bounce all of that and make a pad out of that and add something else. And it's so often I have a part of the, you know, scoring process where I do sort of sound design, you know, mm-hmm. but it's all pretty intuitive in the sense that I don't sit down and say, now I'm going to do the sound design for the film. I just, you know, probably can happen anywhere, you know. I'm working on a cue. Sometimes it happens a bit so it's not a very structured process in that sense. Sometimes it can happen when I do the first cue, second, third, and in the fourth cue I sort of find a sound and I start doing the quote unquote sound design stuff, you know, for mm-hmm. for maybe a few hours a day or something, and then I will backtrack and I will, you know, put those sounds into the previous cues that I've already composed. You know, so that might happen.
Sure. So it's a bit of a combination of kind of sketching out longer ideas, but also padding out and orchestrating as you go as well then.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I mean, I'm, I guess, in the door. I mean, I use sound toys a lot.
Okay.
You know, yeah. And some other plugins. So, and I also use some modular plugin stuff that I use as effects, you know. And so my process is pretty much, very rarely I just use a preset as is, if you know what I'm saying. But yeah. I probably, the way I will tweak it is by adding plugins, you know, filters, distortion, you know, some gate stuff or whatever, you know.
Sure.
But then I will probably commit, you know, to audio or something and use it. It depends. Sometimes I drag them in and use them as Apple loops even.
You know? Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
And speaking of plugins and things, just very briefly, what tends to be the sort of sample libraries that you go to most often?
Oh, yeah. Well, plugins, obviously.
Everybody always asks.
Well, sure. I mean, plugins, definitely Sound Toys and a few others. And sample libraries, I mean, to be honest, I have quite a few, maybe too many at this point. So sometimes I will forget that I have stuff that, you know, but I do. I mean, yeah, what do I use? Totally depends. I like some of the Spitfire, you know, textural stuff, right? So mm-hmm. the orchestral swarms and Olafur Arnalds, you know, Chamber and Evo Grids, stuff like that. I have, what's that sound? I don't know. It's Sound Dust, Cloud Viola, Cloud Cello. One sound I used a lot always, and you can probably hear it in a few of my cues. I mean, soundtracks is also the old free Spitfire Horror Scary Strings, right?
Oh yeah,
which I think is brilliant because it just evolves and you know. But for that, I mean, sometimes I will use the Scary Strings and I will compress the shit out of them, you know. to try and get those peaks down. Sometimes it sort of gets very loud. So I will compress it quite a lot and also filter it quite a lot to have it be more pad-like, you know, and I will add it, you know, underneath another string sound or synth sound maybe, just to have that sort of evolving kind of texture thing. So those are some of the, you know, at least string and the textural, whatever libraries I use.
Great.
Yeah.
So to finish us off, what would be your one piece of advice for someone wanting to get started as a film composer?
Well, the one piece of advice that I often give also is like to see it long term, right? To have a like a 10, 20 year old plan, even. You know what I'm saying? To see it as so that the project, the thing that you're, you know, doing is you're trying to learn how to sort of be better at, you know, doing music, composing music, producing music. And that's a long-term goal. And if that's what you're trying to achieve, you know, to learn new stuff every week and, you know, just have stuff sound better, you know, be better at your craft. I always say it's kind of hard to fail if that's your goal, right? Because who's going to stop you from becoming better? I mean, if your goal is to score a blockbuster film within 5 years, chances are you won't succeed, right? And you have to sort of reevaluate and find another goal, etc. I mean, you can also have short-term, more specific short-term goals, of course. I mean, you know, but what I try to sort of keep in front of me as sort of the thing I'm striving for, it's always like to become better at what I'm doing, you know what I'm saying? And see it really long term. You know what they say, it's like, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, but it's definitely true. And also maybe then to sort of acknowledge that, you know, everyone has their own path and to not be stressed out by other people's success or whatever, you know, just try and find your sort of thing in what you're trying to achieve and you know, yeah, I guess set a long-term goal and that goal should be then to, you know, become better at your craft, if that makes sense.
Totally, totally. No, it's great. Particularly the really, like you said, you know, 5 years to score a blockbuster movie, you end up pushing so hard and so fast and working so intensely for such a long time that it's just really unhealthy as well.
Well, that's the other thing I sometimes say. It's like, it is your life, right? Every day when you're sitting in front of your, you know, door, whatever you're doing, networking, you know, writing music, that's your life, like every day. And you don't know if or when or how you're going to be successful. So you might as well enjoy the ride, right? You know, to try to find like it's easier said than done, but it's totally crucial to, you know, having a good life is to sort of try and find a setup for you in terms of, you know, life quality or whatever, where you enjoy your days, you know, and, you know, try to, you know, it's really important to do stuff that's not music related also, you know, to hang out with friends, or if you have family, spend time with the family, you know, go outside and get some fresh air and all that stuff. It's like super important. So, yeah.
Great. Well, thanks again once more for being on the show, Oscar.
Thank you.
And take care.
Take care, Johnny.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.
I hope that you learned plenty from that episode. Don't forget to grab your free copy of my ebook, The Media Scoring Guide, by visiting soundtrack.academy/ebook. In the book, I take you through all of the skills and equipment you'll need to be a media composer, as well as explaining the entire process of scoring a media music project. Once again, please subscribe and leave a review on your favorite platform, and we'll see you in next week's episode. Thanks for listening, and wherever you are in the world, I hope you have a creative day.